from 90.7 WFAE. This is Newsworthy for Thursday, February 5th, 2026. I'm Eric Thiel. Charlotte-Mecklenburg schools voted Wednesday night to turn two planned early release days, February 11th and April 29th, into full instructional days in order to make up instructional time lost due to recent winter storms. James Farrell has more.
Superintendent Crystal Hill said Wednesday that the 2025-26 academic calendar has enough wiggle room built in for the district to meet the state-required minimum of 1,025 instructional hours this year, even with the disruptions. But CMS still wanted to make up for lost time.
We do not need to make a change to this year's academic calendar in order to comply with state law or Board of Education policy. However, we do want to provide every opportunity for students to be back in school and learning in person.
Inclement weather has impacted CMS operations for 8 consecutive days, with 3 canceled days, 3 remote days, and 2 delayed openings following consecutive weekends of rare winter weather. CMS has already been weighing doing away with early release days in future calendars. Feedback has suggested those days are unpopular with both parents and staff. James Farrell, WFAE News.
The North Carolina Department of Transportation said Wednesday that it has decided to build part of the Interstate 77 Express Lanes project through Uptown by elevating the toll lanes. Steve Harrison has this report.
The DOT considered two options for the massive $3.2 billion rebuild of I-77. Build the new lanes at the same level as the existing highway, or elevate them through Uptown by putting them on top of the interstate. The state said the elevated option, quote, significantly reduces property impacts to McCrory Heights and Wesley Heights and minimizes the amount of land taken from Fraser Park. It also doesn't impact Pinewood Cemetery. Some neighborhood leaders had urged the state to either not widen the highway or look at placing part of I-77 below ground. They've said the elevated toll lanes will be ugly and increase noise pollution, but the DOT said that would be too expensive. The group Sustain Charlotte criticized the plan, saying most of the DOT's community engagement was done before the elevated plan was unveiled. Steve Harrison, WFAE News.
State regulators Wednesday night listened to the first round of public feedback on Duke Energy's new energy plan. Zachary Turner brings us this report from the Durham County Courthouse.
13 people testified before state regulators. Their concerns centered on climate change, affordability, air quality, and the utility's decision to build new natural gas generators and delay coal plant retirements. Durham resident Pablo Friedman worried about the increasing energy demand from incoming data centers.
We all got a message saying the power grid was at capacity. If we add on more data centers, how will that be managed? Where is the power generation coming from?
The new plan omits wind energy, but battery storage received a big boost. Duke Energy said in a statement to WFAE that its existing 250-megawatt battery fleet provided relief during last weekend's winter storm and high demand. The next public hearing is in Wilmington on March 4th. Zachary Turner, WFAE News.
North Carolina schools saw a decrease in crimes for the third year in a row last school year. That's according to the latest numbers from the State Department of Public Instruction. James Farrell has more.
The number of crimes reported at North Carolina schools fell by around 6%. The rate, which is calculated per 1,000 students, fell by about 8%. Violent incidents increased, though remain rare, at a rate of 0.2 incidents per 1,000 students. DPI Chief Accountability Officer Michael Mayer said the data shows crime and discipline is largely concentrated among a smaller number of schools and students.
And so when we take this all together, it's not a picture of system-wide disorder, it's a picture of concentration, right? It's concentrated in specific grades, it's concentrated in key transition years, and among students who are already facing multiple overlapping challenges.
Incidents involving possession of a weapon fell by about 20%, but possession of drugs remains a thorny issue, ticking up slightly and accounting for around 60% of all incidents. James Farrell, WFAE News.
Carolina Panthers owner David Tepper is mentioned in several emails sent to and from the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein, including one in which Epstein invited Tepper through a third party to join him and Bill Gates for breakfast at his house in 2014. The emails were included in the latest batch of documents released by the Justice Department. There is no evidence that Tepper was the recipient or sender, or that he took Epstein up on his offer for breakfast. Tepper is also mentioned in two emails sent to Epstein by a former executive for Donald Trump's casino empire, asking if Epstein knew Tepper and speculating about a lawsuit settlement Tepper was involved with. A spokesperson for Tepper declined to comment. Beginning today in South Carolina, all visitors and patients at Prisma Health hospitals across the state will be required to wear face masks until they can be evaluated for measles. The new restrictions come as the state battles a growing measles outbreak that's now the country's largest in more than two decades. At a news conference Wednesday, pediatric infectious disease doctor Anna Catherine Birch pleaded with parents to vaccinate their kids.
The more individuals who are immunized against the measles in a community, the better chance we have to eradicating the disease in the community.
At least 867 people have been infected in South Carolina since the outbreak began in October in Spartanburg County. The majority of cases have been among unvaccinated children and teenagers. The U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission says the restaurant chain Kickback Jack's will pay $1.1 million to settle claims it refused to hire men. Kenneth Lee has more.
The EEOC says the chain of sports bars rejected male applicants for non-managerial jobs, including servers, bartenders, and hosts dating back to 2019. Investigators found that at 19 locations, including some in North Carolina, fewer than 3% of the employees were men, and some restaurants had no male servers at all. The chain has a Mooresville location. Kickback Jack's has agreed not to discriminate against male job applicants and to include images of male servers in its promotional materials. Kenneth Lee, WFAE News.
The Western North Carolina Conference of the United Methodist Church released a public statement Wednesday calling for more humane immigration policies. Julian Berger reports.
Nearly 1,000 United Methodists across Western North Carolina, including Charlotte, have signed the statement. They raised concerns about the, quote, inhumane treatment of people in our country in ICE raids. The group says current policies are creating fear and that their Christian faith compels them to stand with immigrants and speak out publicly. Among them is Charlotte Reverend Nina Nguyen.
Staying silent is not an option. Staying silent almost seems like you're being complicit. And so there was a desire, I think, by a number of people to say, no, we're going to speak out.
Nguyen says the statement reminds the public that treating people with dignity is central to their faith. Julian Berger, WFAE News.
Election officials have disqualified Republican Margot Dupree from the GOP primary for North Carolina's open U.S. Senate seat, finding she failed to prove she's a North Carolina resident. In a 3-to-1 vote, the State Board of Elections sided with two residents who alleged Dupree actually lives in Florida, where she owns property, and that the address Dupree used to register in North Carolina is not a home, but rather a Charlotte UPS store. Dupree told the board she did not have a North Carolina address because she's been living in a camper, but also admitted the camper was currently parked in Florida. Dupree says she plans to appeal and could still run in the general election as an unaffiliated or write-in candidate. The Charlotte Hornets will have a new look as they try to extend their winning streak. The team announced a pair of trades yesterday that will bring North Carolina native Coby White back home. White, a guard, had been the leading scorer for the Chicago Bulls this season at about 18 points a game. The Hornets also added veteran guard Mike Conley. The Bulls get Colin Sexton and draft picks. In another trade, the Hornets acquired point guard Tyus Jones and some draft picks from the Orlando Magic and waived veteran guard Pat Connaughton. Charlotte visits the Houston Rockets tonight looking for their 8th straight win, something they haven't achieved since 1999. 3.5 years ago, the North Carolina Department of Transportation finished building train platforms and other infrastructure for Gateway Station. That was a critical step to moving Amtrak service from its outdated home on North Tryon Street to a more center location uptown. But Gateway still hasn't opened, and there's no sign of it being finished anytime soon. For more on the delays and whether the new transit tax might speed up this project, Steve Harrison spoke with our Nick Della Canal.
Steve, before we get started, give us an overview of what Gateway is supposed to be whenever it's finished.
The master plan is to have a huge transit hub, Amtrak service and streetcar service, and then also in the future, the Red Line to Lake Norman, the Silver Line light rail. There would be buses and the Greyhound station. And there's also development planned, offices, apartments, and retail. It would be like a second downtown.
Okay, and you were at the Gateway site this week, and that is far, far from happening. What did you see?
If you stand on Trade Street and look up, you can see the nearly finished platforms, essentially ready for Amtrak to start service. All that's left for the city of Charlotte to build is some kind of waiting room slash ticketing area and put some finishing touches on that platform. But it's been about 3.5 years since the DOT finished its part of the job, and there's no timetable for Amtrak to move.
So what's going on? Why no progress?
Well, like I said before, this is a massive project, and the two private developers apparently don't believe the market conditions are right for them to start building. Last fall, Axios reported on some of the tension between the city and the state. The DOT wants the station to move forward, possibly with a temporary waiting room, and the city said, we don't have enough money for that. But in a few months, all those money problems will, in theory, go away.
And that's because of the new transportation sales tax that voters approved. It goes into effect July 1st, right?
Absolutely. 60% of that new 1 cent sales tax will go to the new Metropolitan Public Transportation Authority, which will take over all aspects of the Charlotte area transit system. And since the planned Red Line commuter train will start at Gateway, that means Gateway Station will become part of the authority's portfolio. The city has estimated that a new temporary Gateway Station would cost about $16 million. The new authority would have that much money in cash after about a month and a half of tax collections, so money is not going to be a problem.
So the authority will come online this summer and will have plenty of money. Does that mean that things are going to move quickly and Amtrak can move uptown sometime in 2027?
It doesn't look like it. To be fair, the authority is just getting started and its 27-member board hasn't talked about it yet. But I asked the board chair, David Howard, whether he wants to jumpstart the project. And he said he really doesn't. He doesn't want anything to jeopardize the city's big vision of offices and apartments.
I will continue to advocate for it to be a mixed-use development. But absolutely, the quickest way is just to build an independent building. I just don't think that's what we want in downtown Charlotte.
And it's also worth noting that the track record for these big public-private partnerships just isn't very good. A lot of them have been delayed for years, like Brooklyn Village and Second Ward, which has been languishing for a decade with nothing built.
And what does the city of Charlotte say about all this?
The city, it seems, doesn't seem ready to turn the keys over to the authority. I asked Deputy City Manager Allison Craig about Gateway. She talked about the Transit Authority being an additional partner, which sounds like the city isn't stepping away from the project. That means you could now have four stakeholders involved: the state, the private developers, the city, and the authority. And Nick, you know, the more cooks you have in the kitchen.
That can mean more delays. Okay, that's WFAE's Steve Harrison. Steve, thank you.
Thanks, Nick.
If you're selling your home in the Charlotte area this spring, be prepared to wait a little longer before striking a deal. It took an average of 96 days for homes in the 16-county region to go from being listed to closing last year. That's according to Canopy Realtor Association. It's a 10% increase from 2024. For more, Ashley Fay of the Charlotte Ledger Business Newsletter spoke with our Marshall Terry for our segment, Bizworthy.
Why are buyers taking longer to pull the trigger? And for context, is this more of a return to normal given how crazy the market was during the pandemic?
We're definitely seeing a rebalancing in the housing market. Buyers really didn't have a lot of leverage. They're starting to get that leverage back now. We're definitely seeing the cooling down across the broader market as interest rates have been higher than they were historically. But a lot of the disconnect we're seeing in the market now is between seller expectations and what buyers are willing to pay for and the kind of houses that they are looking for. A lot of sellers are listing their homes thinking it's still 2021. I will note, though, that it very much depends on the type of house and even the area you're looking in.
Well, could things pick up in the spring? That's typically the busiest time of the year for home sales, right?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, agents I spoke with this week were saying that they're already seeing an uptick in buyer activity. And I'll note, Marshall, that despite the fact that homes are sitting on the market longer, home prices are still going up in the Charlotte region, which I think underscores the fact that the homes that are sort of priced well, the new construction, those homes are getting kind of top of market pricing. But if you haven't invested in your house, or, you know, it's a house that needs a lot of renovation, those homes are going to have to see a bit of a price cut potentially.
Okay, let's now talk about the ongoing saga of Sycamore Brewing, which is still dealing with the fallout after one of its co-owners was arrested in December on sex crime charges involving a 13-year-old. You actually were able to speak with a Sycamore employee to get an inside view. Just how hard was it to get this person to talk, and what did they have to say?
I reached out to over a dozen employees. Most of them didn't get back to me. I did manage to speak to one. He was just wanting to share with me the perspective of the employees who feel like they're really caught in the middle of all this. You know, they were absolutely shocked when the allegations came to light and the arrest happened. A lot of the things he told me were basically like, Sycamore has historically been a great place to work, one of the better paid gigs in craft beer in Charlotte. And I think this is important to contextualize, as craft beer has seen a bit of a slowdown, not just in Charlotte, but kind of across the country. If these employees aren't sure about their future at the brewery, it's going to be really hard for them to find a job maybe in Charlotte in the same industry. So, you know, I have heard that many of the employees are currently furloughed at Sycamore, and a lot of them are just really not sure what's going to happen. You know, we don't know a lot. The employees are saying they don't know a lot about where the brewery goes next.
Okay, over to the Pearl now, where some economic development groups are planning to set up shop. Which ones? And I guess first remind us what the Pearl is.
The Pearl's a innovation district. It's headlined by the Atrium Health Wake Forest School of Medicine. There's also a lot of biotech companies that are setting up shop there. The developer Wexford has actually built Connect Labs within the building, which is a kind of co-working space for biotech and life sciences companies. But I talked to Tracy Dodson at the Charlotte Regional Business Alliance last week, and she told me that it's important for economic development groups, including the city, Mecklenburg County, the Alliance, even state economic development agencies, to have a presence at the Pearl so they can get in front of these entrepreneurs.
Finally, the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Library is pausing its search for a new permanent CEO. What's going on there?
Charlotte-Mecklenburg Library has had an interim CEO for over 8 months now. It is interesting that, you know, given they have such a big project going on in Uptown with the new main library on Tryon Street, that they are currently without a permanent leader. The library told us in a statement that the board has decided to pause the search briefly while they assess what they have learned through the process and evolve the leadership profile required for today's environment, which is a little vague. They do intend to restart the process in the coming months.
All right, Ashley, thank you.
All right, thank you so much.
That's Ashley Fay of the Charlotte Ledger Business Newsletter. Support for Bizworthy comes from the Law Office of Robertson and Associates. And for Thursday, February 5th, that's Newsworthy. I'm Eric Thiel.